suspicion dropped out of her chest. His face was now painted in curiosity. Maya shifted around them, closing the doors to the chapel firmly before she started up the vacuum again, but she didn't resume her work. She beckoned them closer, explaining lowly,
"You never know with this place."
She indicated the loudly humming vacuum.
"The test I did was for thermal diffusivity. I flattened and smoothed out a section of the chain and set it up between a laser and an infrared detector. No matter how much I pulsed the gold with the laser, the infrared detector didn't pick up on an ounce of heat. No matter what I did, I simply could not heat the metal."
"It heats up all the time," Isabel argued, her fingers drifting up to her chest.
"Whenever it changes." "It's still changing?" Maya asked sharply.
Elijah's arm landed over Isabel's shoulders, pulling her back an inch and huddling her against his side. He turned slightly, putting himself between her and Maya.
"Have you said anything about Isabel's eyes?"
he asked quietly, his tone now smooth as silk, yet that somehow made it more frightening.
"Have your children said anything?"
"No."
Maya frowned, rearing back slightly.
"I already gave my word, and I kept the conclusions of my experiments to myself as well. They think the gifted religion is a bunch of nonsense, so they weren't surprised when I told them there were no remarkable results."
"Why would you do that?"
Elijah narrowed his eyes on her.
"That's anti-loyalist behavior. What's in it for you?"
"What's in this for you?"
Maya returned, gesturing the way Elijah was cuddling Isabel close enough that even her cheek was pressed tight to his shirt.
"You aren't on Carter's medical records as a surrogate."
"And you aren't on her records at all,"
Elijah returned.
"Guess who is on my records?"
Isabel grumbled.
"Yeah, it's me. You can both stop talking about me like I'm not even here."
Elijah's grip didn't loosen.
"What's in it for you, Guardian?"
he insisted flatly, a hint of alpha voice creeping into his words.
"You just answered your own question,"
she returned just as flatly. The two of them were actually weirdly similar.
"I'm a guardian. I exist to protect and preserve the gifted religion, and soul-bonded pairs are one of the fundamental pillars of that religion. All gifted are supposed to have a bonded mate, divined by fate. But with all our people segregated into camps and watched so closely, it's impossible for mates to find each other, or to be near each other when they enter into the death phase. Those who do find their mates are to be protected at all costs."
"Mama?"
Sophia raised her voice over the sound of the vacuum, closing the back door to the chapel as she stepped inside. Luis was almost stuck to her back, his face pale, his hand tangled in her shirt.
"Oh."
Sophia's attention caught on Isabel and Elijah.
"Hey."
Her expression suddenly crumpled.
"Did Ashford have a vision? Does he know something?"
"Nothing new,"
Elijah said, as Maya turned off the vacuum. Isabel lowered her walls a little, tasting the overwhelming, sickening terror that rolled off Luis in large waves. She walked over to them, kneeling before Luis and examining his pale, sweaty face.
"You had another dream?"
she guessed. Luis nodded, his lower lip trembling, and then he hid his face in Sophia's shirt and started crying. Isabel stood, her chest hurting, but it was nothing on the heartbroken anguish she felt from Sophia. She sipped some of it into herself, realizing that she had gotten better at siphoning off people's emotions without them noticing, and then she raised her wall again, breathing a little easier and feeling guilty for it. She shared a brief look with Sophia, who had schooled her expression until it only revealed the slightest pinch of pain.
"The same dream," Sophia explained. "No new details. This is the third time."
Isabel glanced down at the boy again. making a decision that she already knew she was going to pay for.
Don't!
Elijah was stepping toward her, but it was too late. She yanked down her walls and gulped at Luis's fear, dragging it into her own body in heaping amounts, barely able to catch her breath before another mountain of terror landed inside her. It was stacking into her body like great big lead blocks, forming a precarious, menacing tower. Elijah caught her arms, spinning her to face him, his cold eyes flicking between hers, his handsome, aristocratic features a little blurry.
"Stop it," he whispered harshly. "You can't afford to be sick right now, Carter. This attack could happen at any moment."
She grappled with her walls, pushing out of Elijah's hold so that he wouldn't feel how badly she was shaking. She didn't want him to know how much she had just shoved into herself. She glanced back down at Luis, but he wasn't clinging to Sophia anymore. He flung himself at Isabel, launching at her so heavily that she actually thought she was being attacked at first. His thin arms wrapped around her hips, his head pressing into her stomach, and she waited for him to squeeze too tight, to assault her with a hidden weapon, to try and force her to the ground where his mother and sister would be able to pin her. But he was just hugging her. His breaths were short and choppy, his tears wetting her shirt, his arms shaking as much as hers were. She slipped to her knees, and his arms unlatched only to fling up around her neck, his trembling body crashing against hers again.
It's okay, he hiccuped. You'll be okay.
Why was he comforting her? Why were her cheeks wet? She hugged Luis back, trying to hide her tears as his shaking hand patted over her hair in clumsy, soothing motions. Heat suddenly surrounded her spine, the scent of spiced cloves and unfurling wood smoke wrapping her up and whispering to her limbs that true comfort was only a breath away. She released Luis, and Elijah caught her instantly, lifting her back to her feet, and then higher, until she could wrap her legs around his waist, her arms hooking around his neck, her nose buried in his throat.
"She took everything the boy was feeling," he explained,
his arms wrapped tightly around her.
"Is she okay?"
Sophia whispered.
"She will be,"
Elijah grunted.
"Can we have a minute?"
"Of course,"
Maya responded softly.
"Luis, come here, darling.
We'll give you 5 minutes, but you shouldn't stay in here too long. They'll send a crew to check on you." "I'm aware."
Elijah's voice was short, but he seemed to wrangle it into something more polite.
"It was interesting to meet you, Guardian. Take care of her."
Alpha voice. Maya's voice.
"Can I say bye?"
Luis whispered.
"Another time, Grasshopper."
Maya soothed him.
"We need to give them a moment. Come on."
As soon as the door closed, Elijah moved to a bench, yanking it away from the wall so that she wouldn't have to unwind her legs from around his waist. He sat, his hands catching her face and lifting it from its hiding spot against the warm security of his neck, where her sorrow unfurled in thoughts of wood smoke.
"Are you going to pass out?"
he asked. His face was blurry, but she was pretty sure a heavy frown weighed down his lips.
"No,"
she grimaced.
"I just took it really fast, and it was... he's so..."
"He's a child dreaming of his entire family being murdered,"
Elijah supplied dryly.
"I'm sure he's thoroughly traumatized. You taking away the emotion won't even touch that trauma."
"Stop it,"
she swatted weakly at his chest.
"It's my power,"
she slurred.
"I do what I want with it."
His lips seemed to quirk, his thumbs rubbing at the drying tears on her cheeks.
"I've only seen you cry once, the day you died."
Which time? She tried to bury her face in his neck again, to draw that powerful scent back into her lungs, but he held her face firmly.
You're so strong,
he said quietly, those cold eyes boring into hers.
But you're not unbreakable. Stop pushing your luck.
I heard about what you do, she blurted, feeling embarrassed by his scrutiny as her vision began to clear, Luis's emotion finally finding space inside her to settle properly.
I heard you like to humiliate people.
Elijah's grip loosened, falling to her waist. The edge of his mouth twitched even further until it was half a smile.
Really?
I thought you hated bullies.
I do.
Then why?
He regarded her flatly.
Why what, Carter?
Why do you like to degrade people?
Did you hear that I like to degrade people? Or did you hear that it was something I did? Because there's a difference between doing something and liking it.
Why do it if you don't like it?
Now that's a better question. But I never said I didn't like it.
Isabel groaned, swatting his chest again.
You're...
He caught her wrist, and then her other, twisting both of her arms behind her back, and then he straightened his posture, using his grip on her arms to press her chest against his. She had to tip her head right back to still meet his eyes.
I like to be in control,
he explained in a whisper.
But the fetish room isn't about what I like. It's about what people want to see, what they would pay to see. And they love to see other people begging to be reduced to vessels for whatever we want to do with them.
What do you do with them?
You're very curious today. Why?
She shrugged, as much as she could with her arms twisted the way they were.
Just wondering.
Well...
He transferred both of her wrists to one of his hands, using the other to grip her hip and draw her closer.
I wouldn't worry, sweet girl. You're going to love what Kaelin does. And when he does it to you, it'll be a nice experience.
When, not if. How do you know that?
His cold gaze was crawling over her face, categorizing the drying tears on her skin. She could still feel the wetness clumping her eyelashes together.
Because of what happened last night with Gabriel,
he finally admitted.
You aren't that close with him, but you still let him tell you how to touch yourself, didn't you?
He continued before she even had a chance to respond.
And not because of the bond.
He tugged her even closer, ducking his head to whisper the words against her cheek.
It was because he offered to take it all away for a moment. The stress, the decisions, the danger. He was completely in control, and you trusted him enough to know that he would keep you safe if you gave it all up. He would take care of you and make you feel good, and you didn't need to give anything in return except your sweet submission.
She suddenly felt restless, her breath coming in short gasps, her entire existence narrowing to the way her legs were still locked around his waist, her arms twisted behind her back, one of his hands tight on the curve of her waist. She was straining toward him, her wrists stuck together obediently, even though she might have been able to get them free if she surprised him with the effort. She was happy for him to position her however he wanted, because she... felt safe with him. But he was wrong that it had nothing to do with the bond. It was his scent convincing her to trust him, and she could only smell him because of the bond. Though she supposed that didn't mean his scent was a lie. Alphas could scent everyone around them, and that didn't make them trust everyone around them. Heck, they didn't trust anyone. Did she trust Elijah? She wasn't sure.
Interesting,
he muttered. He had pulled back, examining her face as she remained silent.
You think I'm manipulating you?
It wasn't a question.
Aren't you?
Maybe.
He released her wrists, his hands lightly squeezing her arms as he lifted her, standing and setting her back on her feet.
Don't take it personally. I find it easier to deal with people this way.
Why don't you just say what you really mean?
He smirked, covering his mouth with the back of his hand as a short chuckle fell out of him.
Okay, Carter. I think your innocence is liberating, in a way I didn't quite expect. I think your asshole of a father didn't prepare you for the more, well, let's just say, social aspects of Ironside, because he doesn't really see you as a person, does he? And your mother...
Careful,
she hissed, stepping into his personal space, her eyes narrowing into slits as she stared up at him. For some reason, that smirk broke out over his face again.
Your mother, he continued, ignoring her warning, was likely traumatized by her own social experiences, and preparing you for something she would never have wished for you wasn't high on her list of priorities, I'm guessing.
When you say social...
I'm talking about sex and romantic relationships, yes.
Right.
You've grown up with a very twisted notion of romance playing out right in front of you, with Ironside influencing your ideals every other night, and Hollywood adding in a sprinkle of uncertainty on the side. Which version do you believe? The environment that created your father, the relationship he has with your mother before your own eyes, or the movies he acts in? You're remarkably good at holding all those twisted influences inside you while you let go and just feel. And I believe that makes you incredibly dangerous to us. It's beautiful, and there's no room in our world for sweet, beautiful things.
She glanced down, staring at the puckered scars running down her forearms. She didn't even bother to cover them up, but there was no doubt that she no longer felt beautiful the way she once did. Dance used to make her feel beautiful, but something had changed. She didn't dance to soar anymore. She danced because she was a scratched record on a turntable, stuck repeating herself over and over, because there was nothing more to her than the things her father had raised her to be. She was just wobbling along, singing the same song, dancing the same dance, waiting for someone to lift the needle and shatter her for good.
I like what you see, she managed. I wish it was true.
His finger suddenly appeared beneath her chin, lifting her face delicately until she was forced to meet his eyes again.
When is your next appointment with the bond specialist?
This afternoon. It's usually on Thursdays, but...
The day of consolidation is tomorrow,
he finished for her.
And then we break for the summer. Is she going to come up with a plan for how to keep the bond stable over the summer break?
Isabel nodded, forcing his finger to drop, but his eyes stayed fixed on hers. His stare narrowed and unblinking, his attention making the hairs along her arms stand on end.
Good,
he grunted, straightening away from her.
You should ask to continue your sessions with her over the break, phone or video meetings.
She blinked at him, but he was already striding for the door. Chapter 13. Baby.
It still isn't working,
Gabriel muttered, watching as her arms fell limp to her sides, the song over the speakers fading into silence before restarting.
Dance with Elijah.
Elijah was sitting there quietly, considering her with that same hard stare that hadn't shifted from his face since they had left the chapel an hour ago.
Not this again, she sighed, switching her attention back to Gabriel.
Professor Lai didn't say it had to be a partner dance for the final assessment.
And yet, the point of the assessment is to apply for her third-year class, which is a class specializing in partner work.
Gabriel returned. Why don't you give it a try? What's the harm? She glanced between them, realizing they both had that sharp, assessing stare. This was another special Reed and Spade test. But she didn't feel like being assessed anymore. If they thought they saw something they didn't like, then that ugliness was bound to grow in gruesome power the deeper they looked. The truth wasn't pretty. The truth was so unsettling that she didn't even want to admit it to herself. She walked over to the door and flicked off the light, and then strode to the windows, drawing the heavy curtains until the room was doused in darkness. It had turned into a miserable day, so there wasn't much light to sneak in around the fabric. She felt better like this, like she was in one of Kaylin's climbing sessions. Terrified, but sure that she would never fall, because each time she had climbed with that blindfold stealing her vision over the past few weeks, he had guided her safely back to the ground. She had never stumbled. And this way, the difference between her and Elijah wouldn't be as glaring. There would be no witnesses to just how broken and scarred she looked beside someone like him. She walked back to the alphas, finding them with ease since the blinking lights from the audio panels were right above them. Pick a song, she muttered, snatching up her phone and thrusting it out to where Elijah and Gabriel still sat, unflinching, barely even showing a hint of curiosity over her strange actions. Elijah leaned forward, scrolling through her phone for a moment, the light from her screen illuminating his perfect, impeccable features. He tapped on something, and she tossed it back to the shelf, only catching a glimpse of a song called Baby before it started booming over the speakers. Elijah held out a hand to her, barely visible in the darkness, and she hesitated for a moment. She couldn't do this. She couldn't dance with Elijah. Maybe she should just... He caught her hand, pulling her into his body with a tight yank, just as the first heavy thump of the song vibrated along the floor. Just let go, he murmured, so softly she almost missed it. Forget about how you look, how you feel. Just follow my lead for 3 minutes. You can do anything for 3 minutes. He moved her slowly, gripping her shoulders and twisting her torso, bending her back and then stroking up along her spine, drawing her up and into his body. He flicked up her arm, and she turned to watch the shadowed limb drop back to her side, her instincts kicking in just in time to make sure the fall was graceful and weightless. Even in the dark, she could see the hesitation in her movements. He shifted his leg between hers, his foot brushing the inside of hers, making her step where he wanted her to step. At first, his movements were slow and deliberate, the pressure of his hands firm. But as she loosened up and followed the suggestion of his touches, he used less pressure, until even the slightest shift in his posture managed to move her one way or another. He guided her with his hands, his legs, his feet, his weight and size, bending her and twisting her until she felt like she was made of rippling silk, her only purpose to decorate his body as he created slow, beautiful choreography, seemingly on the spot. She might have floated away if he wasn't bending her over his thigh, his fingers trailing over the front of her shirt, skirting the bumps of the chain embedded into her skin. For the briefest second, her doubts came crashing back. Perfect, impeccable Elijah. And her. A sigma with scars like ladders up her arms and a foreign chain hooked into her skin that could turn her into a monster at any second. But then he was pulling her up, and his knuckles brushed beneath her palms, her arms obeying the unspoken command to move into a new position. And she lost herself to the dance again, her focus narrowing on his cues, her attention straining in the dark to follow his lead. It only took a quick flick of his wrist to send her into another dip, and this time she let her whole body unfurl, her arms stretching up above her head as he pressed her into the arc. The second the pressure of his fingers against her stomach eased, she pulled up, searching for his hands again, closing her eyes as he transitioned her into a series of crisscrossing, intertwining steps that had a huge smile breaking over her face as her heartbeat thudded, marveling at how perfectly he managed to move them both. He spun her, but it wasn't a big flourish, only a chance for her to twirl back into his body like a magnet, his hands already raised to catch hers. Except he didn't catch her. He didn't grab her. He didn't grip her. He held out his hands, and her fingers brushed lightly against his palms as he guided her. He was conducting her. She was the one who pressed closer, looking for his next leading touch, his next guiding step, molding her body to his to try and anticipate him better, until she could even feel the uneven breaths that rattled his chest. His movements became more complicated, but her body only obeyed with more ease, allowing him to lift her, to toss her just enough that his grip was able to switch rapidly from her waist to her thighs. She tightened all her muscles to keep her balance as he spun her around, before he tossed her again, spinning her this time, catching her just as perfectly, his hands cinching her waist as her back landed against his chest. He raised her, bending her back over his shoulder, his hand running along the outside of her thigh. She stretched out her leg, still following the flow of his subtle touches, even though he was now tossing her around. He suddenly gripped the inside of her thigh, turning her again as she bent her other knee, keeping her elongated leg strong as she caught her free foot and bent completely over his shoulder. She released the pose as soon as his hands shifted, keeping herself pliant and willowy as his palms wrapped her hips, twirling her again as he lowered her, his feet already nudging hers across the floor in turn after turn after turn, until her breath dropped out of her chest completely, and she was too dizzy to do anything but cling to him when he drew her back in.
"Sweet girl,"
he said, holding her close, his voice rough, his hands dragging her suddenly up his body, his hips grinding into hers. The movement was so sudden, so forceful after his drugging, guiding movements, that a sound actually hiccuped from her chest, her legs hooking up to cling to his hips on instinct. He was hard and pushing right between her thighs, the solid length of him pressing tightly to her suddenly throbbing center like her tights were only a momentary barrier that could be torn away with one of those magical flicks of his wrist.
"I think that's enough for today."
He suddenly set her down, and she realized his song had already finished, and a new one was playing. "Sorry," she choked out, unsure what else to say. He ducked to whisper against her cheek.
"It's enough for today, because reducing us to shadows won't hide a thing if I put you on your hands and knees and see how prettily you'll bend with your hair wrapped around my fist and all that sweet-smelling, desperate heat wrapped around my
Your delightful self-control?"
Gabriel was suddenly behind her, spinning her around, but his eyes seemed fixed over her head. She swayed between them, her thoughts scattered.
What? What the hell? Had Elijah just lost his composure?
"Focus,"
Gabriel snapped.
"I stopped, didn't I?"
Elijah returned, a growl still riding his tone.
"You try having her damp fucking tights rubbing all over the head of your
My delightful manners remain intact."
Gabriel pulled her away.
"But I'm sure one of the other cavemen can empathize with you." "Stop."
Alpha voice.
"Bring her back."
Ah, shit.
Gabriel froze, and a shudder traveled through Isabel.
"Ignore,"
Elijah gritted, the word a breathy snarl.
"That."
He made a sound that was halfway between a growl and a groan.
"Take her away."
Gabriel marched her over to the bench, snatching up all their stuff in the dark before guiding her back to the door, his steps quickening as the room grew suddenly, ominously silent now that her phone had stopped playing music.
Fucking hell.
He pushed her out of the door and slammed it behind him, before grabbing her hand and tugging her into a run.
First class?
He shot out over his shoulder, before answering his own question.
It's not time for your first class yet.
Shouldn't I... She tried to twist away from Gabriel, worried that Elijah was surging and that running away would only make it worse. But Gabriel interrupted, tugging her harder.
You shouldn't.
Why not?
Because that particular issue has absolutely nothing to do with your safety.
She frowned, keeping her head down as he dragged her toward the dining hall. She could hardly demand answers with students spilling over the pathways on their way to grab breakfast and cameras leering down at them.
There's Theo,
Gabriel said, pointing out the tousled dark head of hair ducking into the dining hall, taller than most of the students around him.
Go straight to him. No detours. I can't leave Elijah alone, and you aren't allowed to be alone either. Mickey's rules.
He spun on his heel, jogging away from her, and she followed the slow slog of students into the dining hall. Theodore had already grabbed a tray and was filling it to overflowing. It seemed that the food theme that morning was just pancakes, because that's all she could see. They were all different shapes and sizes, stacked onto labeled warming plates and surrounded by tumbling displays of fruit, selections of yogurt, flavored creams, an assortment of syrups, and an entire section of miscellaneous toppings. There were thick and fluffy buttermilk pancakes, spotted blueberry and chalk chip, orange pumpkin and pecan, buckwheat, whole wheat, ricotta, lemon, oatmeal, and cornmeal, and then there seemed to be an international section. Thin stacks from Sweden, puffy, jiggly towers from Japan, savory samples from Korea and Japan, tiny little Dutch puffs, and flat, sugary Hungarian crepes. She scanned the other labels with distracted eyes. Chinese, Finnish, Mexican, Persian, Bhutanese, Hungarian, and Indian. It was one of the most elaborate breakfast displays Ironside had done since she had arrived. She was used to it on special occasions, but she couldn't remember anything special about that particular day. It was the day before Consolidation Day. Theodore was mixing so many different types of pancakes, it actually made her stomach start to turn. But then she realized he was checking his phone as he piled things on. Killian, Kian, Moses, Nico, and Oscar were already tucked away in their booth, and only some of them seemed to have food. "Need a hand?" she asked.
"Just the illy I was waiting for."
He immediately doused her in a smile that made her stomach flip before he transferred the tray to her hands, pulling out a fresh one. He paused, his smile disappearing as he glanced around her.
"Elijah and Gabriel are supposed to be with you."
"They got held up."
"Hmm."
He examined her expression quietly, but he didn't press her, turning back to his task until the second tray was also full. He added on what she wanted to eat, and then they carried all the food back to the table, setting the trays down as the other alphas descended, grabbing for plates and muttering their thanks.
"Hey."
Moses caught the hem of her shirt, pulling her firmly down beside him.
"Thanks for the flowers."
She peeked over at him, but he had already released her shirt and was entirely focused on his food. And then a sudden, booming voice distracted her, making her jump in shock.
"Attention, students!"
The voice reverberated through the room, projected by a microphone. They peered out of their booth, watching as a group of officials strode into the hall, wheeling what looked like a projector on a small stand.
"If you could all give us your attention for a few moments, we have a special announcement that concerns all of you."
It was a woman speaking, a brunette in a navy suit, her fringe sweeping over her face in a harsh fashion.
"An incident has been brought to our attention,"
the woman continued, stepping into the center of the room as the other officials set up the projector, casting a light over the back wall of the dining hall. Moses caught Isabel around the waist, lifting her out of the booth and setting her on her feet again as the other alphas slid out, gathering around her. She pulled her phone out as all the other booths emptied, everyone spilling out to watch the back wall. Navigating to Sophia's contact, She sent off a quick message, asking if everything was okay on their end.
Sophia, nothing out of the ordinary yet.
She began to reply, but the back wall suddenly filled with an image, distracting her. Because it was her. Her face was blurred, but the dress Killian had gifted her wasn't.
The fuck is this?
Theodore growled out lowly, apparently also able to tell that it was her.
This video was taken last term by a student who was hesitant to turn it in,
the woman announced, as the video remained paused, stuck on the image of Isabel, stepping out of dorm A.
We have very strict rules when it comes to bullying and sexual assault,
the woman barked into her microphone.
Bullshit,
Moses mumbled beneath his breath.
Let this video be a warning to you all,
the woman said ominously.
We're always watching, and inappropriate behavior will be met with severe and swift action.
The video started then. Crow lumbered onto the screen, and Isabel sank backward, closer to the booth, wishing she could hide from all the cameras in the room. Crow's face was blurred, but the fuzzy circle was much smaller than the one protecting Isabel's identity, still revealing the limp, dark strands of hair that fell around his face. Not to mention he was easily one of the largest boys on campus, and his only slightly muffled voice rang through the room the second he spoke.
Let's try this again, shall we?
He was dragging her away from the entrance, and the projection blurred as whoever had been secretly videoing him shifted quickly to follow, refocusing and zooming in as Crow held her upright against the back of the dorm.
I knew you'd give in eventually.
Crow crooned, his voice more distant now as her body pitched and wobbled to the side, her limbs falling limp and unresponsive. The video cut off abruptly, and the official paused with the microphone raised to her lips, a small, cruel smile concealed as a storm of whispering broke out through the hall. The officials wanted to publicly shame Crow. But why? He was a beta, and it definitely wasn't to protect anyone from bullies or predators. The officials had known about, and were gossiping about, all the attacks made against her, but not one of them had tried to speak to her about them. There was a commotion toward the back of the room, students scrambling away from a person standing near the entrance to the hall. Crow. He glanced over at her, his eyes empty, his mouth forming a word.
Welcome.
Welcome? What? Someone shoved him several steps backward, almost knocking him off balance despite his massive size. Bellamy was standing before the bigger boy, fuming, his eyes spitting furious fire. His mouth was moving in a furious gush of words, but Isabel couldn't hear a thing he was saying from the other side of the hall. He shoved Crow again, but Crow didn't even bother to fight back. He spat out what looked like a curse before spinning on his heel and stalking out of the hall. What the hell was going on?
It saddens us that it took so long for this footage to find its way into our hands.
The official spoke again without warning, everyone jolting their attention back to her.
We want all of our students to know that they can come to us.
She emphasized it, as though she had already spoken it a dozen times and was frustrated that nobody was listening.
If you have something to report,
the woman motioned to the wall behind her, reminding everyone of what they had watched.
Then you know where to find us. We would like to assure you that confidentiality is absolutely key.
That's one way of delivering an invitation,
Moses grumbled from behind her. He was standing surprisingly close. She could feel the heat from his body, his words stirring against the back of her head. She wasn't sure when he had last stood so close to her. On purpose. The others were also shifting closer, not just to her, but to each other, forming a tight circle with her and Killian in the center, Theodore to the right, Kian slightly in front of everyone, and Nico to the left. Their bodies were tense. Theodore and Nico's expressions tight and wary. Oscar was somewhere behind her. She could smell his strong oleander scent rolling over the fragrances of the other alphas like a cloud of smoke, muddying them all up. The sensation was unsettling. It smelled like a forest set on fire, with tinges of Nico's whiskey turning into gasoline, and Kian's sunshine smoldering far too hotly.
"Invitation?" Isabel whispered, barely daring to move her lips as she turned her head, too focused on the woman to look all the way back at Moses.
The official was staring out over the sea of gathered students, her brows raised in expectation. When she found Isabel tucked behind Kian, she paused, repeating,
"You know where to find us,"
before clicking her fingers at the other officials to follow her as she stalked from the room.
"Wait, that's it?"
Isabel stared after the woman. She didn't even say where to find them. Theodore, who had been leaning up against the side of the booth to her right, his shoes touching hers, his arms crossed, curled closer, his lips by her ear. He even raised his hand to block the cameras from reading his lips.
"The track team told you to find out where the club was. You found out. This is them summoning you. You know where to find them, and confidentiality is absolutely key."
She snapped her mouth shut, unable to properly reply in the busy dining hall. The other students had broken out into a confused mass of whispers, one of them calling after the official.
"What about Crow?"
The shout was a little too loud, and Isabel craned her neck to peer around Oscar to see who had spoken. A second-year beta. One of Crow's friends. Or was she? It seemed like Bellamy's fan club of betas were trying to distance themselves from Crow. The official paused in the doorway to the hall, turning to look back at the beta.
"Alaric Crow, along with others, have been questioned in relation to this incident. All students must be cautious not to start baseless rumors, as this is a form of harassment in itself. The person in the video will be found and dealt with by the Academy Board."
Theodore scoffed quietly, and it seemed like not even the beta girl could find the words to respond, her fists clenched by her sides as the officials left the hall in a swift clicking of heels and tapping of business shoes. Isabel didn't move, and neither did the alphas. They waited, watching and listening, for something else to happen. Finally, Theodore slid back into the booth, pulling Isabel in beside him. The rest of them filed back in, and all the plates were rearranged as they settled into new positions.
"Should we do an end-of-year party?"
Theodore asked casually, acting like nothing at all had happened, as he violently shoved a buckwheat and muesli pancake off his plate to get to the fluffy Japanese pancake beneath it, which was beginning to cave in from the dolloped cream and sliced strawberries he had piled into the center of it. Apparently, he was having a treat day.
"Obviously,"
Nico said at the same time as Moses said,
"No.
It should be Consolidation Day themed like last year,"
Kian added, though he didn't look particularly excited by the prospect.
"We can hang the gifted American flag all over the place and have a red, white, and blue cake."
"Or we could just chill,"
Moses muttered, stabbing up the buckwheat pancake Theodore had abandoned.
"I think Elijah said the officials already offered to sponsor another dormet party."
"Must be nice."
Isabel froze, staring down at her plate.
Did she just say that out loud?
She glanced up. They were all staring at her.
"To have coffee," she finished lamely. "I forgot to get one."
"Here."
Theodore shifted his mug her way.
"That's okay."
Her face was starting to burn.
Theodore hated people stealing his food or sharing his utensils. He was almost as bad as Gabriel.
What dorm are you trying to get into again?
Oscar asked blandly, leaning forward to fix narrowed, dark eyes on her.
Correct me if I'm mistaken, but you'll be prancing through dorm A in your rich girl pajamas next year, right alongside the rest of us spoiled alphas.
If Oscar had said that to her a year ago, she would have tried to crawl beneath the table and die. She still wanted to slump down and disappear a little bit, but she also knew that the spark of annoyance in his eye was something he only showed to his friends. If he truly thought so little of her, he would have been ignoring her completely. I can't tell if your issue is with me thinking you're spoiled or if it's just my pajamas. She popped a mouthful of chocolate chip pancake into her mouth.
It's definitely the pajamas,
Kian supplied, leaning back in his seat to chug half a cup of coffee.
He's as obsessed as Gabriel is with your underwear.
Moses glanced up from his breakfast, scanning the faces around the table before he blew out a disappointed breath.
Such a waste. Gabriel isn't here.
Where are those two?
Nico didn't even look up from his food.
They got held up, Isabel muttered.
Everyone glanced at her. Even Nico, who stopped eating for half a second to do so.
Elijah,
she glanced nervously around the table, trying to find the right words in front of the camera.
He overdid it in dance practice. Surged his movements too much.
Theodore's brows knit together.
Surged his movements?
Yeah. I mean, he overextended himself.
They were silent, several of them checking their phones.
Can't wait to question him about that later.
Oscar finally spoke, his tone full of dark humor. Kian sighed, shaking his head.
Any idea why he might have overextended himself?
He asked Isabel.
No idea,
she said quickly.
Oh?
Nico, who had gone back to his food, suddenly looked up again, his eyes narrowing. She felt her face, neck, and chest all start to heat up, and she quickly pulled up her palms to cup her cheeks, turning even redder as the warmth flooded into her hands.
You really don't know?
Nico asked, his gaze pulling her in.
I might know,
she blurted, before quickly shaking her head.
I've got to get to my first class.
She shot to her feet, realizing she had somehow been sandwiched into the back of the booth with three alphas either side of her. She turned her pleading look to Theodore, and he met it with a small, amused smile.
I want to say that won't work on me, but nothing's ever worked better,
he declared, pushing Kian out of the booth and reaching over to drag out an annoyed Moses, who tried to take his plate with him. Kian grabbed his bag and slung it over his shoulder.
Let's go, doll.
He snatched up her bag before she could, and then he hoisted up a third, sending it flying into Moses' chest.
You're with us. Sorry to break your absence streak. Was hoping to finish the year without going to a single one of those ridiculous classes.
Moses grumbled beneath his breath, abandoning his breakfast to follow Isabel and Kian out of the hall. Chapter 14. The Healing Power of Crystals. Or not. Isabel had been in such a rush to escape breakfast that she didn't even realize how early they were until they spilled into the still, dark, empty classroom. Kian flicked on the lights and took hold of Isabel's wrist, pulling her to the back of the room. He nudged open the swinging door to the supply closet where Professor Vega kept her psychic paraphernalia. He twisted his body at the last second, pulling her ahead of him and into the cramped space. He stepped in after her, his face carefully blank, and Moses moved in beside him, dropping his bag by the door and reaching over for Isabel's bag as Kian pulled the door closed behind them. It wasn't too dark to see their faces, but the shadows now settling into their features made the flat set of their mouths look more like scowls. She felt along the shelf behind her,
knocking over a stack of tarot card boxes. "What are we doing in here?" She stepped onto a pile of divination textbooks, just so that they wouldn't be towering over her, and Moses flicked his attention down to her feet with a small shake of his head.
"You're hiding something."
Kian stepped into her personal space, reaching out to the shelf beside her head. His scent washed over her. Salt water and gentle heat seeping into her pores and making her lick her lips as she tracked him warily with her eyes. He only grabbed a long, smooth crystal from the shelf, turning it over in his palm with a thoughtful expression.
"Hiding what?" she croaked, glancing between them. "Elijah and Gabriel."
Moses stepped over a box of meditation cushions, nudging them back toward the door to make room for him and Kian to crowd her up against the shelf. She had no idea if they were trying to intimidate her or simply trying to keep their voices low.
"What really happened? Why couldn't you say it in front of the cameras?"
"Because Elijah surged."
She stared down at her feet.
"Gabriel said we had to leave him."
"He actually surged?"
Moses interrupted, like he still couldn't believe it.
"Surged how?"
Kian cocked his head to the side, looking more curious than surprised, a lock of dark gold hair slipping over his forehead, tattooed fingers brushing it absently back.
"What do you mean, how?"
She switched her attention from her shoes to the roof.
"Isabel."
Kian's voice lowered to a purr.
"Look at me."
Her attention darted back to his face, her jaw set stubbornly, teeth grinding together. He cupped her jaw, his thumb slipping up above her chin, brushing beneath the swell of her lip, his eyes darkening to a velvet sapphire, his alpha ring glittering almost menacingly. He tipped forward, whispering close to her face.
"Did he want to fuck you, doll?"
She blinked at him, her stomach swooping.
We were just dancing.
Gian's attention switched to her mouth.
"Do you know what it looks like when someone wants to fuck you? Do you know what it feels like?"
She lifted her chin.
"Yes."
He licked his lips like he was tasting her deception, and his grip on her chin tightened, his eyes darkening further, his alpha ring beginning to swell.
"Get it out of her now, or I do it my way,"
Moses snapped, his acidic and sweet scent growing sour.
"This class is going to fill up in a matter of minutes."
The door to the classroom opened as if on cue, and a small group of students entered, chattering animatedly about what had happened in the dining hall. The storage cupboard had slats in it, just big enough to let in a small amount of light, and angled to show them a hint of the classroom beyond. Isabel tried to pull her chin out of Kian's grip, but he only shook his head, making a quiet sound of reprimand before his hand fell to her neck, pushing her tightly to the shelves. She darted a look to the slats, but there was no way they could see inside the dark closet without angling the slats in the other direction. Her eyes snapped to Moses, finding only annoyance.
"Why are you so stubborn?"
he asked, mouthing the words more than anything.
"Why are you?"
she returned. But Kian tightened his grip, and she immediately returned her attention to him. He had switched the smooth crystal to his other hand to grab her, but now he reached up to set it back onto the shelf.
"What happened?"
he asked softly. His grip had been incrementally tightening, so subtly that she didn't even realize when she stopped breathing. She reached up to grab his wrist, and the second her fingers hit his skin, he loosened his hold, his expression unchanging, chillingly blank.
"You're freaking me out,"
she grumbled, as the students began loudly replaying a recording of the dining hall incident on someone's phone.
"Please."
Moses rolled his eyes, shrugging back his shoulders until he found a comfortable spot to lean against the shelves, tucking one of his feet behind the other and crossing his muscled arms.
Nobody's nose is as good as mine. You're not freaked out.
Then what am I?
She flung out in a distressed whisper.
Turned on, honey.
Kian breathed the words against her ear, his grip tightening again.
Tell us what happened with Elijah.
She wanted to snap back at him, but her knees had gone weak, and he had pushed one of his thighs between hers like he knew he would need to hold her up, his spare hand dropping to her hip.
Be a good girl, and I'll give you what Elijah couldn't.
He purred into her ear. She felt her eyes fluttering shut, but then immediately pulled them open, wide with embarrassment as she stared over Kian's shoulder at Moses.
Have you guys spoken to Kaelin?
She asked, her voice trembling. Moses watched her carefully, his dark eyes impassive as they captured every tick and twitch in her expression.
No.
His gaze brushed down her body, taking in the way Kian was pressing her into the shelves.
But we don't need to. It's written all over you. You're built for praise. And I'm remarkably good at finding people's weak spots,
Kian added, a smirk in his voice.
So how hard should I try, Carter? How much should I push you?
His tongue flicked out against the edge of her jaw.
This hard?
He gripped her hair suddenly, pulling her head back and licking along her jaw until he got to her chin, which he nipped at sharply.
Or harder?
Her mind went completely blank.
Yes.
Kian groaned, pulling back slightly. She was staring at his lips, wondering if they tasted like salt water, and if kissing him would feel like drowning. He turned his head, narrowing his eyes on Moses.
Someone needs to keep her quiet while I'm persuading her to talk.
Moses arched a dark, winged brow, his expression challenging despite the quiet tone of his words.
I'm not laying a finger on her.
His attention drifted to Isabel.
No offense, Carter.
None taken, she muttered, Moses' even tone helping to clear the hazy fog Kian had managed to scatter her thoughts with. The classroom was starting to fill up, louder than usual as they rode the wave of drama from earlier. Moses pushed off the shelves, but instead of stalking out of the closet, he only reached over Kian, gripping her shoulder and pulling her forward, her front smacking into Kian's hard chest. Kian caught her hips, pulling her off the stack of books she had been standing on and turning their bodies until she could feel Moses at her back, the three of them stacked sideways into the cupboard. She finally had a full view of the door, and she swallowed nervously at the light slanting in across the floor, missing Kian's shoe by an inch. Moses nudged her stack of books back beneath her dangling feet, and Kian set her down again.
Now let me be very clear,
Kian whispered, ducking back to her ear.
This isn't a punishment. It's a lesson. You're going to be one of us soon, and you need to understand who you're dealing with. Consider this my initiation task. If you beg out, you lose. Pity you won't be able to use your mouth,
Moses mumbled, his body pressing up against her back, his hand suddenly wrapping around the lower half of her face, his grip tight enough to alarm her.
Do you know how to tap out, doll?
Kian's hand settled on her neck again, his fingers flexing in a loose grip. Her eyes widened, her nostrils flaring with desperate breath. Last time, he had eased his grip as soon as she touched his hand. Hesitantly, she reached up and tapped Kian's wrist, and his hand immediately eased away, caressing along her collarbone. As soon as he moved, so did Moses, dropping his grip to her shoulder and steadying her as she gulped in a harrowed breath. Her body was starting to shake, but she couldn't figure out the emotions tripping through her. She was so wet. She knew she would have been saturating the closet in her scent, but her stomach was flipping nervously. She had a feeling she had upset Kian,
but he had made a point of saying that she wasn't being punished. And Moses? He wasn't a person she would ever think to put her trust in. Not to mention, she still didn't know what was happening. But she recognized the way Kian's alpha ring was swelling, and the intent look in his eyes. It was the way Theodore had looked after he kissed her. It was the way Oscar had looked before he kissed her. Kian wanted to kiss her.
"That's exactly right,"
Kian purred softly, nuzzling her cheek.
"Don't forget your gesture. You might need it."
He hooked his fingers in her tights as Moses wrapped his hand around her mouth again. With a rough tug, her tights were torn down her legs. A surprised shriek dashed against Moses' calloused skin as he lifted her enough for Kian to rip off her shoes and yank her tights over her feet, flinging them to the shelf behind him. She jerked, gripping Moses' wrist, and both alphas paused.
"Is that your gesture, Carter?"
Moses asked huskily, his voice deep and low. She shook her head.
"Show me you remember it,"
Kian demanded quietly. She reached shaking fingers up to the back of Moses' hand, tapping it, and he dropped it just as Kian leaned forward.
"Such a good girl,"
Kian praised, his lips barely brushing against hers. Not really a kiss, but more of an acknowledgement.
"That's the last time I remind you. Do you understand?"
She whimpered breathily, and Moses' hand silenced her again.
"Just nod,"
Moses rumbled against the back of her head. She nodded, and Kian reached for a box on the shelf beside him, flicking up the lid as Isabel stared at the picture on the side. Whatever it was a rounded tower shape, and that had confusion and slight panic sparking to life in the pit of her stomach. But when Kian drew the object out of the packaging, it was just a crystal, like the dozen other sizes and shapes of crystals and gemstones lined up along the shelf and stacked away in boxes along the back wall. Except this one was apparently big and special enough to warrant its own box. Kian ran his fingers over the smooth, veined pink stone.